Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, Tommy, you know that this year is going to be the year of the electric off-roader?
Is it really?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them coming. And in this podcast, we're going to be talking about all of them, starting, of course, with the brand new and just announced all-electric Jeep Wrangler. I never thought I would say that.
I know, it's crazy. And in this video, we'll talk about the pros and the cons of an electric off-roader. It's actually a podcast, really. But we'll also talk about why they have a lot of potential, why they have a lot of drawbacks, and talk about what the future could mean for you and your four-wheel drive.
All right, let's get going right after the intro. Congratulations, you have now tuned into TFL Talk, where we discuss everything automotive, whether it's cars or trucks. This is the one place where you can be sure to get independent and honest reviews. Let's get back to the show right now. All right, Tommy, I think we should start with the biggest news, of course, and that is that Jeep has officially said they're building a concept, not a production so far, but a concept electric Wrangler. What do you got there?
Yeah, so on the Jeep.com website, we've got a new tab called The Road Ahead. And this is a tab previewing upcoming models and talking about their electric future. Now, one of the little tiles here is something called the All-Electric BEV concept. And BEV stands for Battery Electric Vehicle. Do you want me to read the little snippet?
Yeah, go for it.
So here's what Jeep says. We plan to reveal a 100% battery-powered Wrangler BEV concept vehicle part as the Easter Jeep brand concept vehicles at the Easter Jeep Safari in Moab, Utah.
Yeah, we don't know if actually there is going to be Easter Jeep Safari in Moab, Utah. It's been kind of off and on. First they canceled it. Now a lot of the hotels are saying they need the business. So it might be back on. I'm hoping it's happening. And by the way, you think Andre's mad that we've got the Rivian behind us because that's an electric truck? And we're talking cars, not trucks.
Yeah, but there is a car, quote-unquote, version of the Rivian, right? There's the R1T, which is the truck, and then the R1S, which is the SUV. So other things that Jeep has teased, something called solar-powered charging. So Jeep plans to install solar-powered charging stations in support of the Jeep Badge of Honor trails across the U.S. Badge of Honor trails are basically iconic trails that Jeep somewhat promotes and gives you this little badge if you're able to tackle in your Jeep branded product. Jeep says look at them, look for them at the iconic Jeep brand locations such as Moab in Utah and the Rubicon Trail in California.
Now there's, you know, been a lot of excitement around electric cars on road, but going off road is tricky for a number of reasons. First and foremost, we took a Tesla Model X off road and we found out that without a low range, you do use a lot of power off-roading, actually, especially if you get into things like mud or sand. I mean, there's a reason that people need high horsepower vehicles sometimes when they're off-roading.
So there's ways around this, and let's talk about the pros and the cons of potentially electrification off-road.
Sure, you can't plug it into a tree.
Well, that's coming, but let's talk about the vehicles themselves.
Okay.
The electric motor makes a lot of sense in an off-roader.
Yeah, it's very torquey, and torque is what you need.
But more importantly, you have instant torque at 0 RPM. So you're not waiting for a power band to build. You're not waiting to get into the torque curve. You simply put your foot on the throttle, and you're able to gently and gracefully modulate the torque, which is a huge deal.
Now, you know, having said that, you know, we do have a probably more off-road experience in electric cars than most, because we actually did take a Model X off-road, and most people have not taken electric cars off-road. But were you able to modulate the throttle when you were off-roading the X? I think what happened was that the stability control cut in a lot.
Well, I felt very confident modulating the power. There's, of course, more that needs to go into it. You need to have differential locks, which the Tesla does not have. But in terms of the actual power delivery, I thought it was very effective in the Model X. Now, one way around not having a low range is by going to electrification, because in theory, you've got that instant torque, a lot of torque, so you're like, oh, I don't need a low range. But you still don't have that mechanical advantage if you are just running one set of gears or one gear, as a lot of the electric cars now are. Basically direct drive. And think of it this way, right? Be it gas or electricity, when you're riding your bike, if you're putting that bike in 10 or 12 gear and try to go up a hill, you're gonna be really straining it.
Yep.
And that's the same if it's a gasoline engine or an electric motor. Now an electric motor, think of it as like a really buff guy on a bike, so it can probably do it, but it's gonna be sucking through a lot of electrons making it happen.
Yeah, and the other thing that happens, of course, is when you're sucking that much power, you start to overheat things.
That's true, yeah. I mean, you do have cooling issues to take into consideration.
Yeah, there's just a lot that has to happen. And before we kind of continue on and talk about what it's like to, you know, have an electric vehicle off-road, in this podcast/video, we are going to go down the list, and sorry, Andre, we are going to be talking about trucks as well, of all the electric vehicles off-road or specifically that are coming this year, and there are some pretty cool party tricks that some of these have, so we'll discuss those as well. Anyway, you were talking about going off-road electric. What else is there to know?
So another pro that could potentially come into play is the placement of the electric motors. So with a gasoline engine, there's typically only one of them, and usually it's in the front of the vehicle, and then you have drive shafts, and you have little accessory shafts to take the power from the engine, put it through a transmission in the transfer case, and then you've got a front and rear drive shaft to the axles. But with electric motors, they're nice and compact. I mean, you're not stuck with just one motor. You could put one in the front, one in the back.
One in the middle.
Yeah, and one in the middle, I guess, if you wanted.
Or better yet, you could put one in each wheel.
And then you have individual control of what's going on with the traction wheels. And in theory, this is a really cool idea. Because typically when you're off-road, you need a differential lock to lock the left and the right wheels at the same speed. If you could put the wheel, if you could put a motor, at least one, in either the front or the back, or one in every corner, you could have super precise kind of telemetry and super precise inputs as to what the vehicle does.
Yeah, and some of these vehicles actually do that. They do put the motor in the wheel. I always wonder what happens when you get it wet, because obviously it's going to get wet in there.
And then you get a lot of like unsprung weight, but you can move the motor more. You could get the you can move the motor inboard a little bit and then have it
inside the wheel?
No. Inside the vehicle, oh. And then use like a little prop shaft to get down to the wheels.
The other issue, and I'm going to be devil's advocate here, that you have with electric vehicles is they tend to be heavy. And most people don't think of weight as being a disadvantage off-road, because obviously everybody takes a Jeep and sticks heavy bumpers on it and big old wheels and tires and, you know, every accessory known to man. But let's face it, Tommy, weight is also the enemy of performance off-road, and batteries are heavy.
That is going to be the biggest con, in my opinion, because some of these battery packs are monumentally heavy. I mean, if you look at like the gross vehicle weight rating on a Model X, which is a pretty big vehicle, but it's not a Suburban, let's be real, it's well over 6,000 pounds. Curb weight is enormous on a Model X, and that has half the battery capacity of something like the upcoming Hummer EV. And here's something I like to say, and I got roasted on Teslarati by saying this, but I absolutely believe this.
All right, what are you saying?
Well, the Tesla folks are saying that the Cybertruck is going to be unbeatable off-road.
Okay.
Because it's got...
The tri-motor.
The tri-motor, yeah. It's got that individual control I was talking about. It's going to have 1,000 horsepower. But what I said, and I still stand by, is I don't think, in terms of stock for stock, you can beat a 1940s Willys Jeep. Like a CJ2A.
Okay.
Because,
think about it.
It's so light. Yeah, it's so light. If you look at on-road technology... A 1940s race car compared to an F1 car from today, obviously, two vastly different worlds. They can't compete, and even, the old one would be so squished in a road course, it wouldn't be funny. But off-roaders, the technology evolves so much slower because the same stuff that a Jeep needed in World War II is the same stuff that a new Jeep needs to get down the Rubicon Trail. It needs ground clearance, it needs good tires, it needs some kind of traction aid, and it needs lightness. And lightness, like you talked about, that is the pinnacle. Yeah, that is amazing.
I mean, you watch some of those old movies that they have of the Jeeps, right? Where they were kind of doing the field tests, and those things are like bounding across.
Yeah.
like little kangaroos. It's pretty hilarious,
and
actually.
At the Easter Jeep Safari, yeah, which is this big gathering of Jeep enthusiasts, yeah, there's a group of guys, let's be honest, older guys, that are still taking Jeeps from the 40s and 50s on little tiny tires.
They're taking them up the escalator.
Yeah, they're taking them up these monster
hills.
Or
Hell's Gate, yeah, because they're so light.
They're taking them up really serious terrain that new guys with $80,000 built-out rigs are, in some cases, having a hard time with. So lightness is key. Well, let's talk about the power, because you said power is a good thing off-road.
I said torque is a good thing off-road.
I kind of disagree.
It depends, because, look, we do a lot of rock crawling, and rock crawling, you could just take your time, right? You pick your line.
Yeah.
And it's not that potentially energy-intensive, but I said running in the sand... running in the mud is very energy intensive. If you look at like the way they go swamp bugging in Florida, right? Those are, you know, built up, crazy, big tired, you know, big, heavy, very powerful vehicles because they need that weight to get through that swamp.
Yeah, I mean, if you're driving through an ocean, you want to...
And same thing in the sand, too. Sand running takes a lot more energy.
Yeah, you're going to want that supercharged big block, the 454. But on the kind of off-roading that most people do, service roads, exploration trails out here in Colorado and out west, that stuff is always so slow. I mean, if we're going on a trail, even a mild trail in Colorado, if you're doing more than 10 miles an hour, you're going pretty quick in a car because you just get bounced out of it.
But having said that, that Tesla, you know, when we were going up that mountain, was using a lot of power because you're dragging a lot of weight up a very steep hill, and that uses a lot of power.
That's where having the mechanical advantage comes in.
A low gear.
Yeah, if you can have a low gear, then the power doesn't matter. Once again, like a CJ2A or a CJ5, the old ones had 40 to like 60 horsepower. But the gearing was so low, you plop that thing in a granny low, let off the clutch, and it will crawl over anything.
All right, I think that's enough of our ham-boning about what it's like to go off-road in an electric vehicle. Let's get down to the brass tacks, Tom, and let's talk about the vehicles that are coming that are electric off-roaders. And the one that's coming the soonest, and hopefully we should have it in the offices any day now, is the first electrified vehicle by Jeep, the Jeep, and this is weird, but that's what they're calling it, the 4xe, right? And that's a plug-in hybrid. Let's talk about that one, because that one is pretty much, you know, available to purchase. It's real. It's not something that, you know, is kept getting, you know, kicked down the road that's going to be, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now or 2 years from now.
So this is interesting. So this is an electrified Jeep.
Yep.
It's not a full electric Jeep.
Yep.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that it's got a traditional gasoline-powered engine and an electric motor. So, you know, it's a vehicle that is capable of going, I think, what is it, how many, if I remember right from the press material, between 25 miles on a full charge. So I think it's got like a 17 kilowatt-hour battery. It's,
right.
It's not huge.
Yeah, and then when the battery dies, yeah, you have a 2-liter gasoline engine that will pick up the rest of the trip. And I think this is a very clever idea because, as you kind of teased at the beginning of this podcast, one of the big questions is, when you're out exploring off-road, how are you going to keep the battery electric vehicle charged?
Yeah, this vehicle should have tremendous range because of the hybrid nature of it, the plug-in hybrid nature of it. You should be able to get a lot of distance from a fuel tank, which is actually a good thing because, you know, getting into nature is great, but being able to get home is even better.
Now, this vehicle operates, like you said, as an electric car for about 20 to 25 miles.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is you are going to be able to use the electric motor in the low range setting with the diff locks.
Yeah, and it's got, the great thing about the 4xe is, you know, we spoke to the engineer in charge of it, and he said that they absolutely did not compromise a Wrangler's off-road ability in any way. So it's got, you know, everything that a regular Wrangler would have. It's just, you know, got an extra battery pack.
So let's kind of discuss that for a sec.
So front, rear, and center lockers?
Right. Yeah, it's got all the capability of a Wrangler.
Disconnectable sway bar.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's got 470 pound-feet of torque, 0 to 60 in 6 seconds, which is very quick.
It should be the quickest Wrangler outside of the 392.
Yeah, the big V8.
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable going off-road and exploring in a full electric four-wheel drive?
That's a great question. You know, our friend Emmy just did the Rivian for the Rebel Rally, right? And kind of it's not really a dirty secret, but, you know, she did it, but they had like a semi-rig pulling a trailer with, you know, massive batteries and a solar array to help charge up that Rivian when, you know, she was in the bivouac at night. And let's face it, me and you aren't going to have that, Tommy. We're not going to have a big old semi with batteries, you know, and a deployable solar array to charge up our vehicle.
So she was out way out in the desert, right?
Well, she depending on the stage of the Rebel Rally, sure.
But they didn't have access to like...
No, they couldn't plug it into a cactus or a tree yet.
No, I think the range is obviously the big question here with the full electric off-road.
Yeah.
If we look at the current crop of EVs, let's look at the SUVs. How far can a Model X go on one charge?
About 300 miles, give or take.
What about the Model Y?
Same thing, depending on which one you get. The newest one that Tesla just announced, the Model S, has up to 420, I think.
But that's a sedan.
Right.
So let's assume 300 miles on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cut that in half for a second.
I would cut that in half. I think that's realistic, yeah.
I think it may, in some cases, be two-thirds now, but let's cut it in half, right?
Yeah.
When I go out and kind of hit some trails in Colorado with my friends, I typically go for the day.
Yep.
So I occasionally will do like an overnight thing, but most of the time it's a day trip. I think for a day trip, if you have an EPA-rated range of about 400 miles, that means off-road, maybe 200 miles, that probably will be enough. For a good day worth of exploring, you're going so slow, you don't really go that far. I mean, you're never really going more than...
I agree. If you're you know, going around, if you're in Moab and you're going and running trails, 200 or 150 miles off-road is a long day.
That's a long time.
We've done the entire White Rim Trail, which is, I want to say, 140 miles.
It's like 120.
Well, it depends if you start at Moab
or not. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one day, and it's tiring. I've done it in a truck, in a car, in a motorcycle, all in one day, and it's exhausting. So, yeah, I think you're right. But the problem comes in, potentially, is if you're like, hey, I'm going to drive to Moab, and then I'm going to go off-roading. You're not.
Yes, you're going to have to find places to charge.
There ain't no superchargers outside of downtown Moab.
Well, the other issue that's...
And it's not just Moab, Salt Lake City, whatever, you know, Palm Springs. You pick your off-roading, Joshua Tree, wherever you want to go.
The other thing that's going to happen is here in Boulder, we've got a lot of infrastructure. We've got the fast charging network.
Right.
And I can go half an hour up into the hills and be in pretty good off-road terrain. If you live in a place like LA, right, you're going to have to go much further east to a location that probably isn't going to have a great infrastructure for fast charging, and then go off-roading. And that's kind of what you're talking about. That's when you're going to start running into the off-road range issues. Now, what's the solution to this? So what about solar panels?
Not enough power.
Yeah. I mean,
you need a giant array.
If you had even an array the size of the vehicle.
Yeah. I mean, like that Tesla Model Y we have right now.
Yeah.
You know, you could plug that into our house and power it for at least a week. It's got that much power if it's fully charged.
Do you remember? So there's a Hyundai. What is that thing? The Sonata Hybrid.
That's right. They burn so well.
No.
It's true.
The Sonata Hybrid has a solar panel on this roof.
Yeah. It just charges up to 12-volt battery.
But apparently it makes enough electricity on a perfectly sunny day to go like half a mile.
On pure electricity.
On pure electric, yeah. And that's a full day of direct sun.
You sure that's a full day and you know, like a long day probably?
Yeah, it was some tiny number. Maybe it was like a mile or something. But it was minuscule. So solar panel's not really an option. Huh. What about backup battery boosters, like extra batteries?
Not doable.
I read there's a company that's building one now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a jerry can for a battery.
Yeah.
It's very expensive and ridiculously heavy.
So we did a series of videos where we took two different chargers, right? A small like utility charger and a big 240-volt charger, and tried to charge up our first smart electric car and then our Tesla with those two chargers.
What do you mean by chargers?
Power plants, right? The little electric...
The generator.
The generators, yeah.
Oh,
not
okay.
Chargers, the generators. The electric generators. So
right.
We took a small one and we took a big one. And, you know, we went into the woods and tried to charge up both those vehicles. And what we found is that you can do it. Grounding is always an issue. The big 240 Honda, right, that we have, which puts out how many? It's 5,700
watts,
which is big. You know, it's something that you would use if, for instance, power went out in your house. You could power a bunch of different appliances with it, including, like, the stuff that uses a lot of power. And we found that works, but then you got to drag a generator. It charges pretty slowly. I forget how many you know, it's kind of like to charge up that Tesla, it would have probably taken over 24 hours, even with the big generator.
I think you would probably be, so it's about the same as, like, if you look at a small pack, like an i3,
yeah,
which has a range of 80 miles, using that generator, you could probably get a full charge in 6 hours or so, 5 to 6 hours,
yeah,
using
can,
a 240
if,
volt
if
system.
If you can ground it. And the thing is, this is a big Honda.
I mean, it's a couple hundred pounds. This is like a big
yeah,
Honda.
It's like the size of, you know, it's a big enough box where you could put a small person in it. It's that's the size of the.
Yeah, it's a big unit.
It weighs a couple hundred pounds.
A Tesla, I'm just going to say, it would probably be over 12 hours and 240 volts. I mean, it's
And then you're going to need gas to power it. And then the biggest issue, of course, is even though the Honda is whisper quiet, it's still, you know, it's a generator, so you can hear it.
Okay, so going back to what I was saying, though, you can get battery packs now. There's a company that makes like a little, basically jerry can full of batteries. It doesn't look like that.
Right.
But it's super heavy, and it's only 3 kilowatt hours, which will get you 12 miles. Yeah. I mean, it's not a lot of juice in that puppy.
So I don't think any of that is practical at this point.
Okay, so what about plug-in hybrids then? This is a good idea then. Would you agree? So you have 25 miles of all-electric range, which is plenty for most people commuting in the city, right?
Yeah, that's why the 4xe makes sense.
And then when you go out into the trees, you've got the gasoline engine that works like a gasoline engine.
But the problem with the 4xe, Tommy, is that there is also the diesel, there's also the 392, there's also the Pentastar, right? If that were like the only Jeep that you could go buy, then it would be a great idea because that would be the one that would get bought and used and people would figure out how good it is. But it's going to be expensive and there's going to be ones that people are going to buy ahead of it. So I got a bad feeling because there's so many choices in the Wrangler. It's going to be the last one that people choose. Some people might be the first, but for most people, the first one, if they could afford it, at least according to the comments we've been reading, is a 392, right? The big old V8. Then probably, you know, the next one is going to be like the Rubicon Pentastar, which is kind of the bread and butter Jeep. Then at some point, anybody who wants to lift it and put old big old tires on it, they're going to want to go with a diesel. And so I'm just curious as to who's actually going to pay the extra money for the hybrid.
So it starts at $48,240. Now, the big issue with plug-in hybrids, in my mind, is in theory, the plug-in hybrid, it should be the best of both worlds. You get the benefits of electricity and the benefits of the gasoline engine. But oftentimes, the reverse happens. It's the worst of both worlds.
Because you're carrying around a lot of weight. You're carrying around batteries and 2 power plants.
Yeah, so it's not a very good electric car when it's running on electricity because it has to lug around 2 liters worth of engine.
Yep.
And it's not a very good gasoline engine because when the battery dies, you're relying on the gasoline power plant to lug around the dead batteries. But I do think there is a place for this technology in an off-roader.
It's definitely a bridge to an all-electric vehicle. It's not the end. It's, you know, part of the journey, not the destination.
But what if the destination can't be electric because you can't plug into a tree?
Well, we're going to find out by the end of this year.
Now, another issue, speaking of range,
yeah,
which is interesting, when you look at like the high-range vehicles, like the Model S that you talked about, the Lucid,
yep,
these are vehicles that are very streamlined. They are low to the ground.
Yeah.
They're very slippery.
The Wrangler is definitely a brick in the wind.
And even if you were able to make a Wrangler more slippery, more aerodynamic, right? Think about what you need to go off-road. You need ground clearance. That's bad for range. You need big tires. That's really bad for range. And all of these are compromises that make them worse electric cars.
So let's get kind of to the next one, which is a Rivian. And there are 2 Rivians, right? There is the one that's behind me, which is the pickup truck. And then there's also the crossover or SUV. And I think out of all of these, and I'm kind of trying to go down the road as to which one's coming next. So first, you know, the one that's almost at the dealerships is a 4xe. I don't know when the electric concept is actually going to be a reality for the Wrangler. We do know that Rivian told us initially that they were going to have trucks and, you know, the cars ready at the beginning of this year. Then they pushed it to the middle of this year. So now we're looking at maybe, what, 3-4 months from now before they hit the dealerships. I would not be surprised if this is actually going to be more like the end of the year because as far as I know, they don't have a lot of dealerships yet or they're called studios. They're calling them studios.
Isn't it Lucid? Isn't Lucid calling them studios?
Oh, maybe Lucid's calling them studios.
Where are you going to buy these Rivians? I don't know where you're going to buy them.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So anyway, so let's just go with what they're saying. If they're going to be available in midsummer sometime. And I think out of all of them, this one has the most off-road experience because, you know, they've been off-roading a long time, testing them a long time. And if you guys are fans, like Tommy and I are of motorcycles, you may have watched The Long Way Up, which was a video that aired, actually it's a series that aired on Apple Plus, where Ewan McGregor and his friend Charlie rode electric motorcycles, the Livewire, the Harley, all the way from Terra del Fuego up to LA. And for their support vehicle, they used a couple of Rivian pickup trucks, right?
Right. Now, I am skeptical about this. I'm not skeptical that they did it.
Right.
I do believe they absolutely did it. But what I'm skeptical about is how they were able to keep these vehicles charged, because they said that they were working with a company to install juice boxes, which are basically chargers along the journey. Thing about juice boxes is, from the images I saw from the show, they looked like level 2, which would mean it would take, I don't know, six to eight hours to charge one of these cars.
What's Rivian saying in their battery? They're big, right? These are like 150 or 200 kilowatt battery packs?
Yeah, so it would probably take a full day to charge one, let alone two, because they had two of them, and two motorcycles. So I think, and I can't prove this, but I think there was a lot of diesel used in generators to keep these vehicles on the road.
There was one shot where you could actually see what their generator truck looked like.
They also were able to tow charge them, so they grabbed...
Right, that's what I was going to say. Remember I said there's two like cool tricks that some of these do? And one of them actually they showed in the series, and that was tow charging them, right? So what they were able to do was they were able to, like, you know, hook them up to a big old semi-truck, and then, the semi-truck would drive down the road, and because of regenerative braking, the Rivians actually charge themselves, which is cool, but yet kind of counterproductive, you know? I mean, you're using a semi-truck that's burning a boatload of carbon, or emitting a boatload of carbon, burning a boatload of diesel, to then charge an electric truck or car that, you know, is probably not the most effective way of using dead dinosaurs.
And maybe they did use, you know, the infrastructure throughout South America to get these things charged. But I would imagine it would have been quite a long trip if that was the case, using solely nothing but you know, like wall plugs and stuff.
You know, there's another party trick that Rivian has shown and has... Not in the series, but they've shown it in videos, and that is, of course, the tank turn, Tommy. You want to talk about the tank turn?
Basically, they can turn, what is it? Is it the front wheels separately from the rear wheels, and then you can get it to spin in its own axis, or is it the left wheels and then the right wheels? I don't remember, but there's a way that you're able to spin wheels in opposite directions to get it to turn 360 degrees in its own length, like a tank.
Yeah, that's the advantage of having independent motors in each wheel, right?
Right.
You can do that.
That's a very cool thing. In the real world, I've never felt the need to do a tank turn. And not once off-road have been like, I wish I could spin this thing around in its own length.
It's probably going to be really bad for the vehicle if there is any kind of grip.
And the landscape. Like, that's going to tear up a lot of ground
But in the snow, it'd be cool.
Well, once again, I don't need to turn around
in sand or dirt. I mean, obviously, you know, you're riding along off-road and you come up to a cliff and there are, a limited ability to make a turnaround, and you don't want to go flying over the cliff. So if you can do this tank turn, you could kind of turn it around, right?
So there are, the base one starts at 67.5.
Are you sure? I think a little bit. Are you talking about the SUV or the...
The truck.
The truck, okay.
67.5. The adventure package starts at 75,000. Deliveries begin...
When?
January 22.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So they moved the bar again.
That's what it's saying on the website.
Wow.
What about the big battery? Does that change it?
It must be a first edition that goes out earlier, maybe?
I don't know. I can't figure this out. But now here it says deliveries... Oh, the launch edition.
Yeah,
here we go.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
The launch editions are sold out. June of 21.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're saying over 300 miles of range.
Yeah.
So, and there's also going to be the truck one coming, or the SUV one coming, right?
Yeah. Now, there's another interesting thing that happened to the boys on Long Way Up, and they showed it, actually. So, I love the series. I watched Long Way Around, Long Way Down, now Long Way Up, right? They went around the world. They went kind of all the way to South Africa, and then this time they went, you know, all the way to L.A. from Terra del Fuego. But there was... I think one of the early episodes, one of the trucks had an electronic failure where it actually locked the brakes, right? The computer said, and then the brakes went, the calipers closed, and they couldn't move it. I mean, they literally couldn't move it. And that's another issue with electrification, right? Now you've got a computer, I mean, like you said, in that old Willys Jeep, right? It's pretty basic. You know, I mean, it's a clutch, it's an engine, it's, you know, freewheeling transmission, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Here, you've got a computer that controls every facet of this car, and when the computer decides that it wants to reboot itself, as, you know, we all know phones do at the most awkward times, we know computers update themselves at the worst times, this is what's going to happen to your electric vehicle, and that time can be when you're off-road 100 miles from nowhere. And if that happens and those brakes lock up, you're not going to call anybody to recover you because they're not going to be able to tow that thing out of there.
The funny thing is, though, You could make such a simple electric off-roader.
Yeah.
There are so many fewer parts that you need to make an electric motor work compared to a gasoline
engine. Like a Manx? You mean like take the Volkswagen, instead of putting the Volkswagen engine, put like a little electric engine in
there? Yeah, I mean, but these truck manufacturers, if Jeep wanted to, they could make a very stripped down all electric model with very few moving parts.
Right.
There's not much to it. You need a motor controller, you need a motor, you need a charger, you need a DC to DC inverter and a battery. And then, you know, you need some kind of direct drive or ideally a
But today's electric cars are super computerized, right?
But you don't need that. I mean, I want a simple electric car. I want two pedals and a steering wheel and an on switch. I don't want anything else. I don't want the traction control and the craziness.
So Tesla has completely, like, to get to autonomous, you got to go the exact opposite way of what you're talking about, right? A vehicle that can drive itself, that knows when to turn on its headlights, that knows, you know, where the next charger is, that that does, like, precondition the batteries before you get to the charger. There's just a lot of electronic control.
I want like a 1948 Power Wagon with 800 horsepower and nothing else. Just leave the Power Wagon bit and then make it electric.
All right. All right. Well, I think we've talked about Rivian enough. Let's go to the next one that is actually the one that is the most expensive, I think, by far, and that is the new EV Hummer that GM introduced. Now, initially we thought it was going to be out sometime 2022, but now they're saying it's going to be out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it is crazy expensive because the first edition, or the launch edition, is I think $112,000.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And this is now being called the GMC Hummer EV.
Ah, there you go.
So this is the approach that I kind of dislike.
Yeah.
Because talk about complicated tech and crazy.
They definitely like leaned into that Hummer image.
I mean, what I would have liked to seen is
it's true.
You know, figure out a way to make it lightweight with a really thin tire, still maintain the ground clearance. You know, really clever engineering. What GM did with the Hummer is they took basically 8,000 pounds worth of chassis.
Even a bigger battery.
Yeah, plopped on four 35-inch tires that are wider than, I don't know.
A whale.
A whale, yeah, exactly. And then gave it 200 kilowatt-hours worth of battery?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That battery pack, seriously, that's probably more weight than the CJ2 I keep talking about.
Yeah. Eventually, they're going to do a more affordable one, like in the $80,000 range, but this $112,000 beast that does, once again, we're talking about you know, cool things it does. It does that crab mode. So
yeah, it does, yeah.
So we could talk about crab mode.
Walk, it's called, yeah.
Yeah, unlike the Rivian, which can do a tank turn, they showed this video, and let's face it, this video was a computer animated video, so it wasn't actually a real vehicle doing this thing, but it can turn the wheels in the same direction, so basically it can crab, right? So you're going down the road, and there's something in front of you, all four wheels turn right, and then you kind of crab sideways to go around the obstacle, and then you turn the wheels the other way and you crab around it. It's a little goofy, but yeah, it's cool.
They also say, because they put so much power into it, 0-60 in approximately 3 seconds,
yeah,
which is not what you need off-road.
No.
1,000 horsepower, which is not what you need off-road. It has an 800-volt DC fast charging capability with up to 350 kilowatts of charging.
Yeah.
Which is quicker than the fastest car on the market right now, the Taycan, which is 270. So that's pretty insane. They're saying charge nearly 10 miles. They're saying charge nearly 100 miles in 10 minutes, excuse me. Top comes off.
I don't believe any of that, by the way.
Why not?
Because I've been fed that line of marketing too many times, right? And in the real world, those numbers are never that quick. You're lucky to hit it for like a minute or two, if at all.
Mm.
For the most part, you know, the chargers, if they do hit that number, it drops off very quickly. So yeah, it's like it's pure marketing, let's call it razzle-dazzle. Or if you're being more realistic, BS.
I do like the four-wheel steering is pretty cool.
Yeah, and where are you gonna find that charger for it, Tommy?
Well, we were talking about that earlier. I mean, with 200 kilowatt hours, hopefully it'll go far enough where you don't really need to worry about charging it up if you're going out on a day trip, because charging 200 kilowatt hours, even at 350 kilowatts, is going to be a long procedure. So some other things you need to know about the Hummer is it's just insane in every way. It's got a massive screen. It's got this crazy interior. It's got locking diffs, I believe, right, Dad? Then they include a front and rear locking differentials. Oh, air suspension. Another thing I really dislike, by the way, off-road for the most part.
Yeah, they tend to fail.
Yeah, air suspension. And they give kind of a bad ride, in my opinion. Apparently, there's going to be a camera underneath it, Why do you need a camera underneath it? Not really sure, but that is apparently something that they're going to incorporate. Of course, heavy-duty ball spline half shafts. You have to, because it weighs a billion tons. It's insane.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy, and it's a little bit expensive. And like I said, they really leaned into the Hummer image, right? Of and what I mean by that, not the conspicuous consumption, not the huge energy, because obviously this thing's electric, but what they leaned into was that image of people buying, like rappers buying off-roaders that will never, ever see dirt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like who's going to take 100? Here's the thing about off-roading, right? Amount a vehicle goes off-road and how quickly it goes off-road is directly proportional to how much it costs.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
So the more expensive a vehicle is, the less likely it is ever to see dirt.
Unless it gets really used, like Range Rovers. What is it?
Well, that's 7 years or
70,000 miles.
Miles. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first time they'll see dirt.
7 years or the third owner or something like that. Yeah, I think I forgot those statistics. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, I mean...
There are some other tech things that we need to talk about that they're going to have to kind of get over.
Dude, by the way, you know that supercharging?
Yeah.
Those don't exist. Those superchargers don't exist that can put out that much power.
350?
Yeah.
Electrify America does.
Uh-huh.
That's 350 kilowatts, the new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're right up to 350 apparently.
Once again, yeah.
So...
You're going to burn your hand out. You know, they actually have to cool that.
Yeah, the
water cool the
cable.
The cable, yeah. Because, yeah.
So you got to protect the battery. So most of these vehicles have the battery underneath them.
Yep.
Which is good for, once again, low center gravity, which is good off-road. It's also very good on-road, and like Teslas have it. But of course, Teslas then aren't going bouldering. If you puncture those batteries, really bad things can happen quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So if the batteries are going to live underneath these cars and trucks, they better be super, super secure. Like even more secure than what you'd find in a gasoline vehicles, because the risks are much higher.
I zoomed in, sorry.
Okay, that's
all right.
Fine.
All right, so there is the Hummer EV coming this year to whoever can afford that much money.
Also, water fording. You got to go through 3 feet of water, I think, is what the Rivian's rated at, where you got to make sure that's better be nice and sealed.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of issues. Let's jump to the one that I think everybody wants us to talk about, and that is, of course, sorry, Andre, the Cybertruck. Which is coming now. Now, okay, once again, so I went on the launch of the Cybertruck. I actually got to ride in it. It's really cool. It's not going to be built the way that it was launched because, well, it doesn't meet federal or local safety or design or any kind of, you know, regulations currently. But they're going to redesign it. They're building the factory in Texas, outside of Austin. It was supposed to come this year. Right now, the latest that Mr. Musk said in the conference call, the investor conference call, was that potentially, Tommy, there may be some like beta or beta, as you British like to say, models running around at the end of the year, but deliveries aren't going to start till 2022, real deliveries. So once again, I think realistically you're looking at maybe this time next year.
So some of the
maybe.
Some of the specs are going to be three available, the single motor rear wheel drive.
And it's the most affordable out of all of them.
Interesting. Dual motor, all-wheel drive.
I want to say it starts with like, and usually Tesla has been good about actually sticking to the price point. So I want to say $39,000, $40,000 for the, you've got the pricing there, right?
I don't, because I still want to talk about the third version, which is the tri-motor all-wheel drive.
That's the most expensive.
Yeah, so ranges vary from $250, allegedly, is what they're quoting, up to $500 plus in the tri-motor.
Basically, I think it's like $40,000 up to like $70,000-ish, $79,000-ish for the really fast tri-motor one.
Yeah, that's right, $39,900. Right. Ground clearance up to 16 inches. Approach angle is supposed to be 35 degrees. Departure angle is supposed to be 28 degrees. It's supposed to have adaptive air suspension as standard. And I also think this is going to be a ridiculously heavy vehicle because it's going to be huge and it's going to need some serious battery.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of buzz and a lot of controversy around it. So one of the things that you'll notice, like the Rivian compared to the Cybertruck, is the Cybertruck looks like it's some kind of dystopian, you know, war-mongering vehicle that a warlord would like, right?
Yeah, it looks like someone pitched a lean-to tent on a skateboard.
And you know, when it came out and they smashed the big metal ball into the windshield and door trying to show that it was bulletproof, I mean, you know, you feel like you're living in a Mad Max movie. Do you really need a vehicle? It kind of speaks to our society and where we were at that time. Maybe we're still there, maybe we're going there, but to me, you know, it doesn't say take me outdoors and enjoy the beauty of the open sky, and you know, let's go and commune with nature, peace, love, and harmony. It says mount the machine gun on the back and go kill the local warlord that's, you know, just encroaching on my territory. That's kind of the vibe it puts out.
I do really like the rendering they did with the tent on top, though. I think that looks really cool. There's like a topper tent. Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, this is such a concept vehicle. I just need to see what it'll look like in
production. Yeah, we need to see what the real one will look like. Lest we forget it, Tommy, there are a couple other players, right? Ford has an all-electric F-150 coming.
Yeah, and then I think GM's going to do a more affordable electric truck, like a Silverado.
Yeah, there's that. But we can talk about the hybrid Ford F-150. We actually had that.
Yeah, so that's got some cool stuff. That's got a 3.5-liter twin-turbo EcoBoost, but it's got a little tiny battery and a pretty big electric motor. And the coolest part of that is not the fact that you can run on electricity up to about 15 miles an hour. It's the onboard inverter, which allows you to pull 7.2 kilowatts of power from the bed.
And that's where I'm getting to, Tom. You saw me and you cleverly took the conversation right there, because if you're going to get a Cybertruck, if you're going to get a Rivian, right, if you're going to get a Hummer, you'll need a Ford F-150 to charge it up. It's true, yeah. Because you can. The cool thing about that hybrid, right, is it's got a boatload of power. We actually tried charging up our Tesla with it.
Yeah, NRI3.
NRI3, and it works like a charm.
It would take a remarkably long time, though. I mean, 200 kilowatt hours,
Yeah, but that EcoBoost is a giant generator.
Yeah, but 200 kilowatt hours at 7.2 kilowatts, you'd be parked there for like a full day.
Yeah, but you can do it, and it works.
No one's going to be spending...
Right, those generators we were using were having grounding issues with the Ford. You just, and it actually shows you, and the gauges turn into like little electric meters, and it shows you how much power it's putting out.
Yeah.
And you can just plug the Tesla or plug the BMW or plug your Rivian right into that Ford. It's pretty badass.
I have to look up the number again, but it's something like 30 hours of runtime using generator mode.
Yeah.
So you'd probably use a full tank of gas to fill up a GMC.
If you got stuck, you could, Hummer. You know, like Matt's recovery, right? If he's out there trying to recover, let's say, a Rivian, and he could bring that F-150 hybrid, plug it in for a couple hours, give it enough juice to get it back to the highway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very exciting idea. But at that point, you might as well just bring a big generator and a trailer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the F-150 has it built in. It's you can get it in the FX4, so it's off-road worthy. You see what I'm saying?
Ish. You're not going to be dragging it on the...
The trailer's a pain. The generator's heavy and...
I agree. I mean, it's a very cool idea.
It's quiet. It's probably more quiet than the generator.
Look, I love the generator mode. I think when you're out, if you have an F-150, you're looking for an RV, you want to go do a little bit of exploring... Perfect. Get the hybrid with the 7.2 kilowatts. Otherwise, like, I mean, it's a fun idea to talk about, but there's just not enough power coming out of that. 7.2 is less than what you get out of, like, a 240-volt plug at a wall. And it's not level 3. I mean, it's not like it's an Electrify America station. You're not pulling 100, 200 kilowatts.
Yeah, but you're not going to run that much cable into the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but what if you had, like, a big-ass truck with a big-ass generator built in?
Yeah, like Emmy had. Out of all the ones... Probably, like I say, Tesla has the biggest advantage, because right now you can go to places like Moab, Palm Springs, you name the kind of, you know, off-road destination areas, and there are superchargers in a lot of those towns.
Yeah.
Whereas there aren't necessarily, you know, Electrify America.
That's also changing quickly. I mean,
they're there.
They're
seamless, and they work, and we've had, you know, really good experiences with them.
They do work, but Electrify America is growing quickly when it comes to installing new chargers in new locations.
Yeah, and, you know, there's other networks besides Electrify America.
Right, there's EVgo and ChargePoint.
Right,
that kind
so
of
there's a lot more. I just don't want to like single those guys out. You know, we've obviously haven't talked about electric motorcycles. You know, I was expecting like Zero. Gosh, those came out 10 years ago now, maybe even longer. It might actually be longer to be super popular. And let's face it, they haven't really taken off. If you know why, Tommy, I'd love to hear it.
Well, they do an electric dirt bike.
Yeah, of course. They've done it from the beginning.
Let me pull it up here. It looks really cool. But I think part of the reason, Dad, is they don't go very far. So on a motorcycle,
they're quiet.
You don't have the option, though, to put battery after battery after battery, because they're small, right? So they don't go very far, and they are stupid expensive. They are very expensive.
Yeah, we just bought a Chinese, you know, dirt bike with a little 250cc engine for $2,000, that Zero is not going to be that inexpensive.
Let me find the little... So they do a couple of... They do an adventure bike now, too, which is pretty cool. Here we go. So this little dude here is the Zero DS. Let me give this puppy a click. They just don't go very far, if I remember right. Let me look here.
The major manufacturer... I'm not the Zero isn't, but, you know, the traditional manufacturers like Honda... Toyota, Yamaha, a lot of them are coming out with electric first starter bikes right now. KTM has one of those where if you've got like the little kids used to have these little tiny like 50cc bikes, now you can actually get those in electricity and that's where it's kind of catching on. But for the most part, electric dirt bikes are not that prevalent yet. And I'm not even going into like electric side-by-sides and electric sleds and, you know, the rest of the off-road world.
So this one, the DS, goes 82 miles in the city.
Yeah.
In the city. On a one charge, and it costs $11,000 starting. And then if you want the additional like batteries and stuff, you're going to be pushing $14,000 in some cases. And if you want a quick charger, that's another $600. So $14,000 for a bike that'll off road maybe do 50 miles, which isn't that much for a motorcycle. So 50 miles in a car, it's a ton.
You could get a really nice like. KTM or...
What about like an Africa Twin? Could you get an Africa Twin for 15?
That's a big adventure bike. No, but you could probably get a Tenere.
There you go. That'd be cool.
Yeah, you can get that.
So I think we're even further from seeing off-road adventure bikes than we are from seeing off-road-worthy cars. So the Harley did do the Livewire on that Livewire.
And it was also crazy. They took a street bike, they converted it to an adventure bike, and then they never built it like for consumers.
Isn't Harley coming out with an adventure bike?
They were supposed to be coming out with an adventure bike, but...
I'm really excited for that. I think it's cool.
It's been kind of delayed, I think.
The Pan America. Yeah. Here it is.
Is it delayed? I think it's delayed.
I don't think it's electric, though, right?
No, it's not. It's gas.
Launch event, 2/22/2021.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's coming up real soon.
Yeah, hopefully it'll actually happen. So, you know, there are a lot of challenges for electric off-roading. There are a lot of pluses. You know, the one I just mentioned is they're quiet.
Very quiet. Right? Yeah, that's cool.
So, you know, I've been doing a lot of off-roading, and as much as, like, guys love big V8s, when you're out there in nature and you've got somebody with an uncorked, LS swap Jeep that's basically thundering down the trail, it can be kind of annoying, dude.
It is a little obnoxious. I'm excited for that. Instant torque's good. We talked about that.
Yep.
But the potential for torque distribution is really cool. Minuses, range. Another minus is
cost.
Just cost. That's another good one.
Yep.
Batteries are still very expensive. Weight is a real problem. And then, of course, just charging infrastructure on our trails. I'm really curious to see, do you think Jeep is actually going to start putting these chargers on these trails?
Yeah, they announced it. They said they were going to start putting...
But do you think, genuinely, is that really going to happen?
I think it's kind of like that juice boxes that they put on the route.
The dealerships?
No, the juice boxes they put on the route for a long way up.
What, they're never going to be used ever again? And they're going to collect dust?
It might be.
we'll see.
It might be, a question of timing,
If you're going to do it, you have to do...
Too early.
You have to do fast chargers, which are a whole kind of another ball of wax. Because the solar chargers, no one's going to wait there for 6 hours.
Well, you could do solar chargers with big batteries, right? Well, we go flying, right? So when I say flying, we go RC, plane flying. And there's a little, hut there where they've got batteries and they've got a solar charger. These are 12-volt car batteries, right?
Oh, I have no issue with the solar. The solar is cool.
And the solar charges up the battery, and then you plug in your little tiny battery for the plane, and then you can go fly. So the same thing could potentially be done, right? You could get a giant solar array with batteries, Tesla batteries, for instance, that charge up, and then people can charge up off the battery and not have to just, wait for the sun to do its thing.
You're going to have a big battery if you want to charge more than one Jeep up.
Yes, of course.
I mean, if it was a fast charger, you could plug in for half an hour and get a lot of charge.
You'd have to have a big array and a big battery, but it, if people aren't using it that much, I mean, it's not like, the Walmart, right?
Right, yeah.
Yep. You're not going to be there.
Black Bear Pass, yeah, you're not going to have a line of 4xEs or whatever.
It's plugged in. Well, there you have it, guys. I'm sure we've forgotten some other electric vehicles. We kind of try to go through the plethora of off-road electric that are coming. Which one are you the most excited about, Tommy? Which one, we just bought a Raptor that we're going to finish up using pretty soon. So right now the plan is probably to charge, trade in the Raptor for something electric. Or the Bronco. We'll see.
I mean, I am most excited for this potential for an electric Wrangler.
Yeah.
I think the Tesla looks like a doorstop. I think the Rivian is perpetually delayed. I think the Hummer is overkill and far too expensive. So I'm hoping Jeep pulls through, comes out with something relatively affordable with decent range. That's what I'm going for.
Rivian... I'm going to talk to you. I'm talking to you directly now, Rivian. You seem to be really good at raising money. But at this point, we'd love to actually get our hands on one of your vehicles so that our audience that is substantial could get a little bit more insight. And these are going to be your customers that are going to be buying your cars. And I know that 2 years ago at the LA Auto Show, when you were the first to come up with the electric off-roader pickup and SUV, the world went crazy and everybody, you know, laid out a deposit. But times have changed. We're seeing actually what happened with the Mach-E, so that might be a little cautionary tale for you. The latest is that, you know, a lot of people that went and put down money on the original Mach-E over a year, what, and a half ago now, are dropping out. So you can actually start to buy those right from the dealership. And that might be a cautionary tale for Rivian, and you might want to actually get some test vehicles into our hands or into other publications' hands and, you know, do more than, you know, give Ewan McGregor a support vehicle.
All right, well, let us know what you think of electric off-roaders in the comments section below. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening as a podcast, thank you so much for listening. We're available on Spotify and Apple and pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts.
You know where else we're available?
Where?
TikTok.
Well, we have a new TikTok account. This is very kind of silly, but if you want to see our car reviews,
TFL
but,
Studios,
but a lot less of us,
yeah,
then check out the TikTok account.
Yeah, it's, we're having fun with it, so check out at TFL Studios on TikTok now. Thanks for watching, and see you guys next time. Ciao.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.